Welcome to Bullseye. Derek Sharp joined by Joey Johnston. Kaylee Cottrell not with us this week. We expect her back for the next show. We're thinking about you, Kaylee. And on this show, we'll be talking to, as always, Alex Golich, the head coach of the South Florida Bulls, our player guest, Connor McLaughlin, from that offensive line. Joey, we talked about how Miami has a really strong offensive and defensive line and size and speed. Yeah. We weren't just doing it to fill airspace. The South Florida Bulls have played a strong schedule, and eventually you're going to go up against a team that's playing a little bit better than you.
Yeah, really, really impressed with the caliber of Miami's team. I mean, seeing them up close is something else. We'll see how it goes. It's interesting the Hurricanes play Florida, and then they'll play Florida State. So really curious how those games turn out. But boy, on the night that USF got them, Miami was really, really good. Their offensive line has got to be, if they're not the best in the country, they're on the short list. And Carson Beck, if you give him that much time and don't get him off his spot, he's gonna really hurt you. So the Bulls ran into a very difficult opponent. That being said, they tried like heck to stay in the game, and there were some moments in the second half where they tried to claw back. I know Coach Golich was happy with the effort in the second half. Wasn't happy with the result, of course, but I did notice that the players afterwards, they all seemed to have the right attitude toward it. They turned the page, they're going to learn from it and move on, and that's what you have to do in a situation like this. A difficult night, but you got to move on.
It was 49-12, but you mentioned there were some times there coming out of the weather delay, which I want to How was the weather there, sir? You were there.
Well, you know, it was raining a bit, and I thought that was the thing to adjust to. And then I noticed on the message board where they said, "Oh, there's going to be a delay," and I saw that before I heard the announcement. And then everybody's moving out, so it was an hour 42. So I stayed down on the field for a while, and then I went up to the press box and got a chance to visit with some folks and talk
Smart
and
move.
All that kind of things, wasting time. And then, you know, long time, long break, but we got back at it.
Coming out of the delay, Byron Brown, it was tough going for him running the ball. Got a great scramble for a 3rd and 6, and then the pass to Chaz Nimrod.
Yeah.
A career day, 128 yards. Miami had a lot of highlights, but I thought we saw continued good stuff from the Bulls in spots.
Yeah, and Chaz Nimrod, boy, the statistics he's putting up in the early season are very impressive. He's averaging almost 25 yards a catch. I mean, if this continues, he's going to be one of the big deep threats in the history of this program. I mean, he is a guy that shows the ability to get behind defenses and get these long gainers, so that's really encouraging. And he's just one of a lot of promising receivers. That receiving core that is working with Byron Brown is one of the strongest points of the team.
Well, we're going to speak to the head coach about that group, about his team, which is off to a 2-1 start, of course, having played 3 ranked teams, and coming up this Saturday, and we'll speak towards the end of the show more about the opponent, South Carolina State at Raymond James Stadium. I know the team is ready to get back there. So here is the head coach, Alex Golich, team off to a 2-1 start. I'm sure a lot of Bulls fans, and I know, Coach, you're not interested in going down this line of thinking, but I'll go ahead and try anyway. If you would have said 2-1, they would have taken it and not asked questions. But since the most recent game was the loss to Miami, can you appreciate the start as a whole, or are you still, you know, thinking we could have done better this past game?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the cliche coach answer. And the truth is, you go into every game with the expectation to prepare to win, and that one hurt. Mm-hmm. That one stung. I would tell you it stung our guys. And I would tell you they don't care what the record is right now. I think when you truly buy into a process-driven culture and a process-driven program, you don't even – remotely think, man, like at this point,
right.
I was hoping to be at this, at, you know, like you're going week by week. We're so intently focused on today that we'll look at it in January and hopefully celebrate a phenomenal next step. But at this point, we got a really good football team coming in here Saturday that we're certainly preparing for with a ton of respect for them.
So 3 games in, do you have the kind of team you thought you'd have? Is anything ahead of schedule? And what have you liked most about 3 games in?
Yeah, I would tell you it was what you were hoping to build culturally. A bunch of guys that don't care who gets the credit, that are willing to go play for each other. That's super fragile too. It doesn't take a lot for it to splinter, and so you're highly guarded that it continues to be that way. But we've got really, really good leadership. That's the part that I'm really proud of, is the leadership. And the leaders are playing their best football right now, and that has to continue for us to have a chance to have success. But I would tell you, I'm really proud of how these guys are working, how the intent is day to day, And there is no looking forward. There's no looking back. They're worried about the moment right now and their process daily. And I feel like that gives you a chance. And that's what you were hoping to build. We have a long way to go, both tactically and technically, to get to where we want to go. Certainly culturally, it's working in the right direction. But I think as we continue to go play really, really hard and really intentfully, the detail part of it, these margins, as I use that term a lot, they ain't gonna get a whole lot bigger. So you've got to continue to focus on detail of everything we're doing. But I think the intent has been awesome.
One of the details you brought up that I wouldn't have thought of, and I'm sure a lot of people didn't think of, is during a weather delay, you know, maybe you regroup, maybe you don't, handle it how you want or you do. But coming out, TV took up all those timeouts. So there was still a full quarter to play and there were no breaks. And that threw your rhythm off a little bit, is how I understood it?
Yeah, I felt like it threw our rhythm off. I felt like we, I don't know if panicked is the word. I felt like we never got control of the game at that point. I felt like it wasn't until halftime that our guys felt like, all right, I know exactly what the heck is going on. I would tell you that's as much on me as anybody else to make sure our guys are ready coming out of that. We were ready physically in terms of our process and our plan. We've been waiting to put it in place for for a while, but I tell you, we've had to go back and say, man, like where was that part wrong? Did we give them too much information? To be honest with you, I felt like, because you got the iPads, it was like you coached the whole game off of a quarter. And I feel like maybe even too much information to where guys were thinking a lot. I think that's coaching. I think that's solely on me, because I got excited. You got this this information at your fingertips.
Before halftime.
Before halftime. And I think the lesson I learned there is, man, just let your guys go play. And we were right in it and on the verge of executing to be able to make it a 14-10 game and play the game out differently. And we weren't able to go do that.
One thing I noticed at the game at Miami, you look at some of the plays that were memorable. I mean, James Chenault, sophomore, gets his second interception of the season. Christian Neptune, freshman, your leading receiver. I mean, it seems like just these young guys are coming out of various spots of and showing up in games. I know we got a lot of veterans on this team, but you got a lot of good young players as well. So speak about the optimism you're seeing from the youth on this team.
Yeah, I think the hope and the natural progression as you're able to go is to not play guys until they're ready. I know I've said it before, but I think you can screw a guy's career up by playing him before he's truly ready. And that's physically and mentally. I think you can play him too early and they lose confidence and it takes forever to get it back, where when they're truly ready, they can go in confidently and execute and just skyrocket in terms of their path. Those guys that are playing are have taken this gradual progression of playing on special teams and then working in rotationally offensively and then being able to play and truly be every down guys for us. You've seen it across our entire roster. Some of these veterans you're talking about started that way and worked their way up. I think when you have a legitimate program that's sustainable over time, that's a natural progression. As you come in, you play on teams, and then you end up being a rotational guy on offense or defense, and then you step up and play defensively or offensively as an every down guy. We've had some phenomenal young guys that have been able to come in. You talk about Chenault, he played a ton early as a freshman. Fred Gaskin played a ton early as a freshman. And you got a guy like Christian Neptune who came in and through these first couple of weeks, you felt like, man, this guy, between him and Moody Rubin, give you the best opportunity to go win in there. And then Josh Porter's had some highlight moments too where it's like, man, like there's real depth, which allows you to play guys a little bit less, but then if you're playing them a little bit less, they're able to play at a higher level. That's depth in a program. And throughout the course of 12 weeks, and then obviously you hope for more, that depth will really continue to show, and we got to continue to build it. And so the pressure is, man, like these guys that you think can help you now, make sure they're on special teams, even if it's just one, to where they're in the flow of the game, they're playing, to where as the season goes, whether it's injury or just they earn the right to play, they're ready to actually attack the moment.
Sticking with the receiver room, there were two highlight plays to me in the fourth quarter that showed you guys, I know you referenced the toughness and being more like yourselves in the second half. Jalen Schuler, preventing what would have been a 70-yard touchdown pass, not giving up on a play. And Chaz Nimrod, for a guy who's averaging 25 yards a pop, his shortest catch when he got popped. And it's almost like the Miami players were trying to intimidate him and not let him up, and he just got up. That's toughness right there.
Yeah, I think that's the standard that's being upheld by the guys. You see it in the form of running on and off the field. You know, like the fourth quarter, as you stand there and you're like, man, like, this is going to be hard to come back from. I'm watching, man, are we going to sprint off this field? Tough drive, crappy ending. Are we going to sprint off this field? Because that's our identity. We're going to be mentally tough all the way through. Doesn't matter what the situation is. And that's the part I'm most encouraged about. Yeah. You pointed out a couple moments there, but the strain, the drive to make sure that our identity is protected, win or lose, our process can't change. And I was really proud of the way that we, at least on the mental side of it, handled it.
So as we turn the page to South Carolina State, Saturday's opponent, you have said they have your full respect. You love what they did last year. We've seen FCS teams win these games before. I mean, you have to be ready for them, obviously. So is your team mature enough to prepare for a game like this and to know what's at stake and not have the roller coaster? Have we reached a point where the Bulls are going to be, you know, process-driven and be ready for this opponent?
It'll be fascinating to watch on Saturday. That's the part that I think, and I talked about it earlier, but on elite football teams, on really, really good football teams, the standard of play doesn't match your opponent. It matches your standard. And it'll be fascinating to watch us on Saturday. I do think you have some game experience in the sense that, one, we've lost against teams that you would think, man, like, we match up well against. So if you need a wake-up call, you can look back to a year ago. We played a team a year ago, or 2 years ago, I guess, in FAM that came in here, and you're like, man, like, player for player, this is a really, really good squad. I don't know what other wake-up call you need other than watch the film. And it, regardless of record, yeah, won their conference a year ago.
Right.
Certainly have a chance to go do it again. You watch the film. There's not just talent at spots. The scheme matches the talent. It's an extremely well-coached team. They play extremely hard, and they are explosive on both sides of the ball. And all you need to do is watch that film. And I think our guys are mature enough in that sense to watch the film and say, all right, like, it's our standard has to continue to be our standard, because, one, that's what it's going to take to go win. But, two, for us to continue to get to where we want to go, there can't be a up and down in terms of our process, our mental aptitude to be able to go and attack this how we want to. But ultimately, at the end of the day, for us to get to where we want to go, we got to go play our best football this week, because you have to continue to get better. And knock on wood, we've been able to stay healthy through it,
right,
to where our guys were physically prepared to go attack it. Now we got to continue to go and get better and better. And you've seen it for years. The teams that peak at the end in November and December and January, those are the best football teams, because their mindset is to continue to get better.
So we don't want the roller coaster effect, but you have been last week. I want to commend you. You were pulled in a lot of different directions. It was all for a good reason, the attention brought upon the program. Now that you've been able to step away from it for a little bit, has it been a more normal week, A, and what did you think of all the attention? I think it's still going to be there at the end of the season, by the way.
Yeah, I think the attention, you could look at it a ton of different ways. From a big picture program perspective, it's what you want in terms of people talking about you on a national level. Not me personally, certainly,
right.
But our program, our university. A lot of people want to know what, who, why, what is it that's changed? And I would tell you, it's the mindset of our players. It's the drive of our players. And we've continued to push the players out in front.
Yeah.
Because it's not about me. It's never going to be about me. There's certainly a lot of people that have come before me that have laid a foundation for us to be able to now go build something really special on it. But you want the attention. It certainly helped in recruiting. It certainly helped on a national level to put our brand out there. And for us to continue to recruit at the level we need to continue to build, that's really, really huge. Am I glad that I was able to not have to change my process at all? That this week it's more normal? I am. But that comes with the territory, and that's the territory you want to live in. You want people talking about you. You want people to recognize what you're doing, because ultimately this game of college football has become the game in our country, and if you're doing anything respectable, people are going to talk about it. So it's our job to continue to build it to where people are, and like I've said several times since Saturday night, we're going to be in that position again. We're going to be in that situation again, and it may be this year, it may be in a couple weeks, it may be at the end of the year, and it may be next year, but we're going to be there, and we've got to do a way, way better job of seizing that moment.
Let me ask you this. You're a really good communicator, and we appreciate it, obviously, for things like this. Sometimes as an assistant coach, you don't get those opportunities. You're just grinding, but the head coach has to be out there telling the story, talking. You enjoy it? You like telling the story? Would you rather not do it? Or what's your philosophy? Because you're really good at kind of getting that story out there, and it seems like, you know, you like telling the story. So how do you feel about the whole thing?
I'm good in terms of making it seem that way.
I think so.
You know what? I think I love being around our players more than anything else. I love the X's and O's. I love the football. I love the building. That's why I enjoy recruiting. I enjoy the relationships with the players, with the families. There's nothing I love more than standing at the top of the stairs and seeing every one of our guys walk in the building every day. That's the part I love. The rest of it, I love the camaraderie of the staff. I love the game planning. I love the challenge of what each week brings. I've learned to appreciate this part of it. I've learned to appreciate the media part of it. I respect that everybody has a job to do, and I also understand that if there's nobody to tell the story, then your story will never get out there. Yeah. And I think the fact that people want to tell a story means that we're doing something meaningful, because if we weren't, nobody would care. But I think it's all part of it. I've learned to probably be better at it. I think my last stop helped prepare me for tough questions and tough situations and the ability to maintain even keel through all of it. But I've also, I think, learned that it's okay to be you. It's okay to be yourself. I know I get emotional at times when it's right. I try to coach with emotion, but not emotionally. But I think when you're off the field, you've got to be yourself. And I also have learned that not everybody's going to like you. And no, that's okay.
Never will.
It never will. But I think I'm at a point in my career and at a point in my life where I'm just comfortable with who I am. I think my perspective has changed over the time. I think as I've grown and have done this longer and longer, I've cared more about what my players think, what my wife thinks, what my kids think. And outside of that, I just want to be a really, really model human being for our players, my family, and ultimately this university, this city, and I take so much pride in who we are, what we're building. Win, lose, I think the way we handle ourselves is really critically important, because the one thing that I do know is we are the doorstep to the university. We are who's in front of the university, and amongst a lot of really great things that are happening here, it's certainly awesome to have a college football program at a place that cares.
Well, we appreciate it all the time you give us, and I learned so much from rereading and relearning some of the things about you. Forgive me if I slip up and call you Alexi from time to time. I thought that was really good. And I also learned that when you're looking at the players filing in, it's at six in the morning. Thanks for all the work you do. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, one of the guys that puts in some great work on the offensive line, Connor McLaughlin, joins us next on Bullseye. One of those Bay-made kids coming back home. I'm sitting next to him, calling him a kid, 6'7", Connor McLaughlin. First of all, Connor, I like you being true to form, still in your shoulder pads and just off the practice field. Didn't even need hair and makeup. How has practice been so far this week after what happened in Miami?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, I think we're re-energized, and there's two ways to look at it. You know, this can either be a learning curve or a stepping stone, or you can take it the wrong way. But we got a bunch of guys with great leadership, a lot of veterans leading the room. We're taking it the right way. We're taking it in stride, and I think this can turn into a really good lesson for us.
One of the veterans is actually getting in some extra work as the offensive line happens to be right behind us. I'm sure that Cole Best is a guy that gets a lot of press for a reason. He's been one of the leaders, I imagine.
Right. Yeah, he's a great leader, obviously. Very good with his words. You know, he always is leading the room from the front. He's got a really good poise and a really good demeanor to him.
Well, you're really good with your words, Mr. Stanford. You were there originally from Jesuit and from Tampa, obviously. Went off to the other coast for 5 years. We'll get into your story a little bit, but I'm going to talk about the story of the team so far for the first three games. Let's go back to the first game against Boise State, all the expectations. I'm sure you were eager to put you guys before the national audience. How do you think you performed? I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah, you know, it's first game, game one. There's obviously a lot of things to work on. You never know what you're going to get week one. But I thought it was a really good first game for us to really set the pace. And I'm happy with it. Obviously, there's a lot of things we could have improved. But it was a good team win, and I'm happy to have started the year like that.
One thing that definitely, I'm guessing, well, there's probably a lot of certain things that make you feel great as an offensive lineman. One, knowing that you're just going to be able to run the ball right through the opponent being one. But another in this offense has to be when you slow it down, because you guys were able to actually not run tempo in the fourth quarter. What was the reaction when that was going on? That had to have been a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, still adjusting the humidity. I think I got my sea legs under me now. But, yeah, it's always a nice treat, especially when you know you're up. 4 minutes, a good feeling. You know, you're like, you did your job and you got to close it out now. So
I got to imagine, obviously, it all came running back to you going back to camp as far as the weather and the humidity that you just mentioned. Was that a little bit of a slap back in the face? Because you were in Palo Alto for 5 years.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't 72 degrees with a slight breeze every day. But, you know, I'm from here. Just had to remind myself that every day. But, you know, once you get accustomed to it, it's what you know. So,
well, we know that tempo is a big part of this offense, but we'll get there in a second. I want to go to the middle game because that was a different situation in the fourth quarter, but also a really good one. I want you to take us into that situation with the quarterback, Byron Brown. You know you've got a big-time leader with him, but the way he was able to and you guys were able to move down the field when it mattered and get that huge win.
Yeah, that was really important for us. You know, obviously being from Tampa, being at USF for a two-hour drive from Gainesville, so that was a cool game for sure. I've never played in the Swamp before. But also just for the team camaraderie, you talk about a guy like Cole that we mentioned. His poise, his leadership. You talk about a guy like Byron. I don't even have to mention it. I'm sure you guys all already know from watching him. But he's a great leader, really veteran guy, and he's really got that energy to him that makes you calm, makes you comfortable. And I feel like we really meshed together when it counted at the end of the game. And, you know, Cole Skinner, want to give him a shout out for
absolutely
literally biting his tongue. But he kept his poise. That's a guy who's really stepped up. And it was really important for us. So it's just looking at it now. It's in the past, obviously enjoyed it the night of, but how do we build off that? How do we keep the ball rolling?
One thing it did show is that you can perform in front of a hostile environment, in front of a very, very loud crowd. And I want to take you to take folks through the offensive line part of that, because when you're not able to hear things normally, what's the communication like?
It was certainly difficult. It was a loud place. We practiced for it all week. Mm-hmm. I've played in loud environments before, but you know, it's always hard to replicate 90,000 people. I don't think anyone has that in their back pocket practice, but, it was really good. You know, we communicated. We had some hiccups. I certainly had a hiccup early in the game. But you know what? It is what it is, and it's better for you. And I think that's another thing to get under our belt when we play in loud environments. You know, we're used to that stimulus.
Absolutely. If you're talking about the hole they got you for, I thought personally that the defensive lineman just fell down. But I got to ask you about that part of it. All the techniques you guys have to learn, how to maybe sometimes hold but not hold. I mean, how much teaching goes into it? And obviously you've learned it throughout your life, but a lot of people watching and listening don't know what goes into it.
Yeah, you know, that's one I would have liked to have had back. Definitely could have tightened my right hand. Mm. I personally, if I was a ref, wouldn't call it, but you know, I'm a little biased to say. So it's a good teaching moment, good thing for a game one. But yeah, you know, sometimes D-linemen can be good actors too. So you gotta know your, have some situational awareness, know where you're at on the field and know that you gotta let go before they start flailing.
Well, let's get into that because, again, a lot of people not only haven't played football, but certainly don't know what it's like being in the trenches. And it's not just one or two plays. You're going up oftentimes against the same guy, or pretty much the same guy through the whole game. So first of all, just take me down there. Do you try instantly and get a rapport going with the other guy, or does it develop as the game goes along? Or do you try and keep your mouth closed and just worry about what you're doing?
You know, I'm not much of a talker, and like I said, was still adjusting that tempo week one, week two.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, just worry about my job right then. But I've never been much of a talker. You know, that's just not my personality. And I mean, I'm quick-witted and I'm witty outside, but you know, when I'm on the field, I'm doing a job. So,
defensive linemen talk more in general is what you're saying, right?
Yes, for the most part.
Absolutely. And just to show off your smarts, I'm sure you can spell rapport.
Yes, R-A-P-P-O-R-T.
Nailed it. Is there an offensive lineman, though, on your team that might talk a little bit?
Skinner's been having some fun out there.
Is that right?
Yeah, I love it. You know, he's a really good energy. That's a guy who's been a spark of lightning for us. He's really come in the room, and, you know, he's a great dude to play next to. He's always got a good attitude. He's always positive, whether things are going his way or not. And that's what you need. You need somebody to calm you down, flip the page. He's a great dude to play next to.
That's great to hear. And he has gone through a lot, and I'm sure he got congratulated a lot for taking it like a man in that situation in Gainesville. I got to assume you've been a tackle for most of your life, but let's go back to the beginning of football. I don't know if any offensive lineman in the world started off wanting to be an offensive lineman as their first pursuit in athletics. What were some of your first pursuits in other sports and or positionally when it comes to football?
Growing up, I love to fish. That was always my main focus.
Awesome. I played
basketball growing up. I feel like I got kind of pushed into that just because of my height. Didn't love it, and I wasn't a great basketball player and really struggled with coordination growing up with my body catching up to itself. But when I got to Jesuit, got cut from the basketball team a few times. That was kind of a sting, but my
dad, were a good team, man. You know.
They're a good team. And Coach Goldman's obviously a very good guy. So
very much so.
But it worked out. Ended up playing football freshman year. I was on the freshman team as a tight end. I don't think I had a single reception.
Tight end.
Yeah, we'll say that. But sophomore year, I was a defensive end, still trying to put it together. I think I was 6'5", 170.
Wow.
And then junior year, that offseason between sophomore and junior year was big for me. Had some really great leaders worked out with every day, like Larry Hodges, Dane Belton, starting safety for the Giants. Worked out with him after school, and I think I put on 60, 70 pounds in a year and played at 235, 240 my junior year.
Okay.
And then weight was always kind of a struggle for me, being a lanky guy, high metabolism, but finished at around 250, 260, and then kept putting it on, jumping rope, trying to get that coordination, you know, and then things kind of fell into place.
Jumping rope was a thing that got you to, you know, you look like a very coordinated guy, but let's talk about the weight now. Are you around three?
I'm right around 300.
Okay, 6'7", if you guys couldn't tell. They had to adjust the cameras to make sure we took care of him. I take you as a guy that eats healthy in general, but I guess you can't always eat healthy if you're an offensive lineman. Am I guessing correctly?
For the most part, that's true. Thankfully, I've got a very loving mom who, like I said, stones throw away, always ready to bring me snacks. But, you know, and I've got a lot of support from my family. You know, my dad has four brothers, three of which in Tampa. The fourth one lives in Chicago, but we still see him once or twice a year with his family. My mom's sister, Karen, lives in Lady Lake. She's really close, so awesome. She's come to a lot of the games, if not all of them. And she's been great, you know, really good support. And I feel really supported. That was one of my main reasons for wanting to come home. And like I said, both sides are very tight-knit, and just having that, you know, transferring isn't a very easy thing to do. Depends on the type of person you are, but you know, you kind of flip your whole routine upside down, especially when you're going across the country with new people.
Wow.
So having that support system has been great.
I don't want to guess here, so I'm taking it that your family, maybe when they found out that you were trying to decide where to transfer to, suggested USF to some degree.
They certainly weren't arguing against it. So, yeah, you know, we're in the thick of football season. I see them on Saturdays and Friday nights. But
that's great.
You know, in the off season, I had family dinners at my grandparents' house, and you know, they're always a phone call away, and they're always right there if I need something.
That's great to hear. You can hear that you can see them, but not your sister. Tell people where she is.
Yep, she is. She's doing really well. My sister Bridget is recently elected to be captain on the UCLA rowing team.
Jeez.
Just worked all summer in Prague for a law firm. well, what is she not doing? She's in a sorority. She's got a part-time job at school while managing rowing. She's a double major, and she's on track to go to law school. So these past couple of years, it's been like, Connor, you kind of got to pick up the slack. But
so just to recap, Connor and Bridget both went to the Pac-12, Stanford and UCLA, and now ACC and Big Ten. I get confused, but we're glad that you're in the American. I did want to bring up the whole tempo thing because we talked about it. Take people through I mean, it's like you can't even celebrate a good play, I would imagine, if you have a pancake block or lead the way to a big run game. You naturally want to look at the jumbotron, but you got to go right to the line. How much work goes into that, and how long does it take to get used to, I guess?
Yeah, you know, there's obviously a lot of work that goes into it. It's a very fine-tuned process, and the staff does a great job with all the little things. I'm not going to get too in detail with it.
Sure, of course.
Obviously, there's not a stone unturned, but there's a lot that goes into it, especially having such a big menu of plays. You got to be able to think and process fast. I'm a very analytical guy, and if I had my druthers, I certainly would slow it down a little bit to be able to process it. But it's been really good for me to be able to think like that, do things that are uncomfortable, and I've really come around to it. I've really started to enjoy the tempo, and no matter how tired you are, you can always look across the line and be like, yep, that guy's more tired than me.
And you getting good encouragement from Coach Hoodie and the crew?
For sure.
Yeah, it seems like a good group you guys have. As we wrap it up, you mentioned your sister with a double major. You were at Stanford for 5 years. I would imagine you're stockpiling degrees like pancake blocks. What's your studies like these days?
Right, so I'm doing a master's in entrepreneurship right now. See where that takes me, hopefully get an MBA in the future at some point. But it's been a really good program, especially coming back knowing, you know, I may want to end up back in Tampa at some point. So trying to get a local network going, making connections with people and trying to think a little bit down the line.
You know what? I have a feeling it's going to work out for you, Connor. Thank you so much for spending the time.
Of course.
Now you can get out of your shoulder pads and your gear.
Raw and uncut.
His team going up against South Carolina State in the humidity of Tampa this Saturday. We will wrap up Bullseye. I want to thank both of our guests, Alex Golish and Connor McLaughlin. And again, Kaylee Cottrell will be joining us not next week because it is a bye week, but they will hope to go into the bye with a victory and a 3-1 record. But this South Carolina State team, you just can't overlook them, as you alluded to with the head coach.
Yeah, you really can't. I mean, we see it every year, an FCS team winning in a game like this. You can't overlook anybody ever. But this is a good team in the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. They've got a lot of talent. And as Coach said, they play that talent really well to their scheme. So I know USF's going to want to come out before the home crowd after this really challenging schedule and put on a good show Saturday noon at Raymond James Stadium. So, you know, let's hope they can do that. But South Carolina State, you got to be ready for these guys, and I think the Bulls will be.
I think they'll be ready to put on a show for the home fans, and I think I was also encouraged this week. The Bulls fell out of the top 25, but they're still getting plenty of those votes, which is what you want. You want to be at the top of that group of five. And looking at the American this year, I think the position is going to be the conferences to have. So the goal is still ahead. I know you wrote about that as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, with beating Boise State and beating Florida and then having to play Miami, USF's name is well known nationally now. They're a known quantity. And I think it's interesting the way the schedule breaks after South Carolina State in the bye. The Bulls have a couple of Friday night games, the home game with Charlotte, and then the road game at North Texas. And those are the games that everybody focuses on. Standalone games on Friday night. All the coaches and players around the country are going to be watching it. So a good chance for the Bulls to really build on the momentum of this attention that they've gotten in the early season. A chance for people maybe looking at the Bulls for the first time and say, hey, what's this South Florida team all about? Well, they'll get a chance to see it on these two Friday nights.
And one thing that didn't slip our attention last week because it happened the day after we taped the show, but CEO, I like the hire, Rob Higgins. I know you have some experience with him. We all do. He's fantastic.
Yeah, Rob is a guy that has been there, done that in so many ways in the sports world. But first and foremost, he's a guy that bleeds green and gold. I saw it with my own eyes first time I ever met him. He was a ball kid on the basketball team. He loves this place. He loves the potential of this place. He's always had a stake in USF athletics, and now he's behind the wheel, driving the truck, and hopefully pulling us all along. But I think, you know, you cannot question Rob's passion and love for the University of South Florida, and I think that's going to be a great thing to have in that seat.
It's funny, we talked to Coach about, you know, telling the story, and we try to tell the stories here of USF athletics and the football team. Rob's a pretty darn good storyteller, too, so we just wanted to mention that for sure. Hey, thank you all for checking us out here on Bulls. I want to thank our entire crew behind the cameras, everybody that helps put the show together. For Joey Johnston, I'm Derek Sharp. As always, keep those horns up.